You're listening to the Missionary Perspective Podcast with veteran missionaries Eric Johnson and Joshua Mead. We're glad you could join us. We trust this podcast will be both a blessing and a challenge as we relate topics in world evangelism from a missionary perspective. Now, here's Josh and Eric.
Welcome to the Missionary Perspective Podcast. I am here with what I still consider as my youth pastor, Pastor Todd Harrison. He pastors the Bible Baptist Church in Normal. Is it Normal or
yes,
Bloomington?
So we're in Normal,
Illinois. And you've been pastoring how long here?
Almost 14 years.
14 years. Prior to that, he was at my sending church, Fostoria Baptist Church in Fostoria, Michigan. And he was my youth pastor from the age of 14 until I graduated. And we're going to get a little bit into kind of your background, your story, where you came from, where you're born and raised, what led you here. And so let's begin with prior to coming to Fostoria, you grew up in Kalamazoo area, Michigan area.
Yes, sir. So my dad has been pastoring the same church there since I was 8 years old. Right. So I'd consider that home, but I was actually born near Fostoria.
Okay,
I was
really?
Born in Lapeer.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yep. Didn't know that.
Yeah. So I was born in Lapeer, same place where our first three boys were born. Yeah. So kind of a neat scenario us there. So then after graduating from high school, Lord called me off to Bible college, met Rachel, who you obviously know. She was your youth pastor's wife. And just for your information, Joshua tormented our children and animals and things of that nature. But we're all still alive, I think. So anyway, spent about 14 years at Fostoria Baptist as a youth pastor. And then through a multitude of events, God made it very clear that he was moving us on to a senior pastorate role. And this was the first church that we actually came and spoke at. I'd filled out a few applications at places and sent out some resumes when people had asked for it. But I can remember when we were traveling back home after our first visit here, my wife said, she's like, Todd, I can't give my heart to a bunch of different churches. Mm. And the Lord really ultimately answered that concern of hers by, you know, a few months later, we came back, we candidated, and the church called us. I think if I recall correctly, 17 people voted us in to the church back in 2010.
Wow. Terrific. Now, you grew up in a pastor's home, and I'd like you to speak to that, because I love your dad, your mom and dad, the church there. They support us. They supported us for years. Just a tremendous church. And your dad, Pastor Harrison, just a unique guy, such a unique family, and has been a blessing to us since we've known him. But I'd like you to talk, because there are some similarities to missionary kids and preacher kids. Missionary kids just have the added, we're in a different country growing up, so different culture. But what are some things, and I think I didn't prep you on this, but I know it'll be dear to your heart. I think you'll have the answer. What are some things your dad did, both your dad and mom, but I want to specifically address some things your dad did that as you grew up, you wanted to go into ministry.
Sure.
You wanted to serve, and you could tell a little bit about when did you feel led to go into full-time ministry, but you didn't grow up resenting having grown up in ministry. And I know your dad, and I know some of the story of, you know, you growing up, and there's things I've implemented. I don't know if I've ever told you this. There are things, principles I've implemented since we had kids, since Tristan, our firstborn, was born, that I got directly from talking with you about what your dad would do and how they would discipline and things like that, that I implemented early on with our kids. And I think, you know, our kids are in a good place right now. They love serving at Senegal, and they do a good job transitioning back and forth. But talk some about that growing up, and what are some things your dad did? Because I want the men who are listening, whether you're a pastor or a missionary, to implement some of these things with your kids.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think I ought to get a percentage of your support, because I probably introduced you to my dad. All right. So I'll be looking for that monthly coming. I think probably the greatest things that my parents did for both my sister and I, and my sister is in ministry as well, was they made ministry enjoyable. Mm. It was not until I felt called into the ministry that then my dad started sharing some of the struggles, some of the burdens that come with that. Mm. And so all's I knew, and I, if I can say this, I would love to give proper praise to that church, Prairie Baptist Church in Scotts, Michigan, because they treated not just my dad, but our entire family as special. Mm. They made it easy for me to want to go into the ministry. Okay. So certainly my parents had a major impact on that, but, but Prairie Baptist Church deserves praise because there's a lot of churches that do not treat their pastor or the staff the way that they should. And we're not talking in a worshipful way, but just honoring the man of God as he's faithful and not holding an 8-year old to a standard. Well, they're the pastor's kid, so they've got to be perfect. So Prairie was great in that area. My parents made in ministry enjoyable. My dad made time for us. How he did that, and there's still very few people I know who will outwork my parents, okay, even in their mid-70s now, all right? But he would start at the office at 3 or 4 in the morning. And so then when I was done with school at 3 o'clock before I had jobs, he could come home with us.
Okay.
And I could take you to the home that I grew up there and front yard, and dad and I were playing ball, you know, whether it's football or baseball or basketball, whatever the case may be, he was there to invest. I still will never forget the times where I can't recall a single high school game that I played, and I played both basketball and soccer, that they ever missed a game. Granted, I understand in some senses they had flexibility because of the type of job that they had, but they made that important. And I'll still never forget when I was playing soccer in college that they drove round trip. It was an 8-hour trip one way. They did it in one day just to come up and see me play one game. Spent a few minutes with me before and after the game, traveled back home. When I was playing soccer at Nationals, they flew down and surprised me in Florida. You know, rented a Mustang. And I got permission from my coach and a couple of my close friends on the team. Instead of riding the team bus, we're in a convertible Mustang in the middle of November. And so they just made things enjoyable. Certainly there are struggles in ministry. You know that. I know that. But none of that ever came out until, and wisely so, not with names of people in church, but my dad would just teach me things and share things with me. So I think that's probably the greatest thing. They just made it enjoyable. And they didn't put undue pressure on us as, well, you're the pastor's kid. You're the missionary's kid. You've got to be perfect. Now, they still expected a lot out of us, both my sister and I. And there were times where we did wrong. We were disciplined for it. And we were, I think it, because both my sister and I love and appreciate our parents so much, it broke our hearts. I still, this is going to get really open, okay, which is what you talked about you wanted, all right? So I can remember a time where my dad came and said, son, me being in the ministry is impacting how you are growing up and learning and loving the Lord. I am willing to step away from that. If you know my dad, you know that that is, that would have crushed him in one sense, but he loved my sister and I enough, and I was the one at fault, not my sister. I shouldn't bring her in on that All right, but I still remember that he was willing to say, I will step away from this. The thing that motivates me and is a passion in his life, a God-given passion for the sake of my children. So I love my dad too much to let him do that. And I think that kind of woke me up to, hey, Todd, straighten up. Let's do right. You know, not perfection, but let's get on board with what God wants you to do with your life.
I love that because as a missionary, when you're on the field, and we were talking about this over lunch, sometimes you put undue pressure on yourself. And I think pastors put pressure on themselves, expectations, and we should be disciplined. We should be hard workers, and we should learn that. But sometimes, if we're unflexible, I love what you said about your dad going early so he could work just as hard, but then have time to spend with you. I think pastors and missionaries, we can get so focused on the work, and we'll talk about this later toward the end of the podcast. Sometimes when a missionary gets to the field, his family's trying to catch up culturally with the language and just trying to orient themselves. We have the work as men, we have the work to dive in and get lost in and feel like we're still accomplishing something and leave our kids and wife behind. And then you're going to reap that years down the road. So I really appreciate, you know, just your dad, that willingness to go and say, you know, I would step down from this. And I know your dad. I mean, that his life is ministry and his life is his family. And so it's, yeah, just huge encouragement. I know one of the things I implemented, we were talking one time a long time ago before Tristan was born, and you had said there are two things I knew we'd be punished for: lying or direct disobedience. It just made it real simple, and it really simplified it for me. And okay, so prioritize that time with your family. Be flexible in your discipline. So work hard. Don't take away from the work God's called you to, but you have a family there. And I like what one missionary said. It was either a pastor or missionary. He said, you can lose your ministry and find another ministry to plug into. You can't lose your family by, you know, you can't lose your family by destroying your family and then find another family to plug into. Sure. It doesn't happen. You got one family as a minister, you know, and so trying to balance those two. So I've always appreciated your father's example, and then the example you're leading with your kids. And you know, you have a son now who is in ministry.
Yep.
I know your other boys are just, I love being around your family because there's joy as a family that's palatable, and there's joy in all your kids, just your whole family being in ministry. And it's visible. We see it. And so that's why later we're going to talk about family and ministry and maybe young couples that are on the mission field struggling to navigate marriage with culture and all of that. So I want you to share some of that. So you eventually, when did you feel led to become go into full-time ministry? And did you ever envision yourself as a full-time pastor, or
okay,
where did that take you?
Back when I was probably in elementary, I remember going to camp and I felt I just surrendered my life to the Lord there.
Right.
And then I couldn't give you the date. I apologize for that. But my dad had gone through some health struggles. I would have been, I want to say 15, 16 years old, somewhere along that time frame. And the Lord impressed on my heart. And there were some serious health problems that we didn't, I mean, it could have been life and death. Thankfully, it wasn't. But the Lord impressed on my heart just this statement, and that is, who's going to take your dad's place? And so that's when I believe God called me into the ministry. I think partially because I had some wonderful experiences growing up as a pastor's kid. Right. Really, pastoring was just the initial thought. I have, and it started with being an assistant. And I think I always assumed I would become a senior pastor.
Okay.
But I never looked for it.
Okay, right.
Some guys, and this is not, I don't think there's a scriptural right or wrong here, all right, Joshua, but some guys will, you know, when they want to find a new place, that they'll start sending out resumes or things of that nature, and that's fine. My wife and I, our philosophy was, God knows where we're at.
Right.
When he wants to move us, he'll make it clear. And how God connected somebody from our church in Michigan to a deacon here at the Church of Bible Baptist at a conference in Detroit.
Oh, wow.
And just small talk brought them to, oh, yeah, you know, and the guy from Fosteria said, yeah, we're pretty sure our assistant pastor or youth pastor is ready to move on. And, you know, and, oh, yeah, well, we're looking for a pastor. I mean, out of this conference, I don't know how many people were at it, but these two had to get together, you know. So we knew that ultimately God just made it very clear that it was time to move. And I did assume that after, I didn't think I could be an assistant for another individual.
Okay.
I had learned working for our pastor, Pastor Wall, just how he liked things done, what he wanted, and for me to then try to adjust to somebody else. I didn't think that was in my my perspective, abilities, I guess. Maybe that's wrong thought on my part, but ultimately the Lord led us here, and we've been here since June of 2010, and it's a great area, very family-oriented area. There are two universities here and then a community college. So the Lord has just allowed us to see some good things. Just about 5 years ago, we purchased a new piece of property that has tripled our square footage. Multiplied our parking by five times and given us land to actually do some things and some events. We had maybe two strips to mow at our previous place and 20 parking spaces. So we're still in a remodel process here, but the Lord's allowed us to see some exciting things happen. and maybe we'll get into this more later, so I won't dive into it too far, but we just sent one of our own to the mission field this past fall.
Right.
And we're getting ready to partner with a young couple from our church to help them plant a church. And we're going to be the mother church and just be there for everything that is necessary there. Last summer, we were able to hire our first assistant, which that's a neat thing. If it's not directly connected, but people who were my youth sponsors who worked with me when you know them, the Haineses, right? But their son is now our assistant pastor here and his wife doing a great job. And so... That's what God has done. We're excited. We are a slow-growing church with, I believe, hopefully I tell people we are striving to just follow the principles of the Word of God. Yeah. Not a perfect church, but trying to do what God wants us to do.
Well, you mentioned last night the church had last year given $90,000 for Faith Promise, which is incredible. To me, that's exciting to see a church that has a passion for missions. And Pastor Dietrich last night spoke about sending churches and supporting churches. And now you'll be sending out a family. You'll become the sending church for a family that's going to plant a church in Montana. We'll talk about that in a minute. But when you came here, now we had the privilege of being sent out of Fostoria when Pastor Wall was there and you worked under him. And I would say Pastor Wall is one of the great missionary pastors in our Baptist churches.
Agreed.
Not just a pastor who has a passion for missions and understands missions and can and built a church, grew a church that had a passion for missions, but as a missionary, he's a tremendous missionary pastor.
Yes.
And he was just from the start launching us out on deputation, guiding us through that path. And then our early years, just having somebody to go to that understood the dynamic of missions and things like that. He was just a great man to learn from, to be sent out by. And so when you came here, was the church already mission-minded with what you were used to at Fostoria, or was that something you implemented? And how did you, having a philosophy that wasn't yet implemented here with missions, were you able to cultivate that? Did it take a while, or where was the church at when you came in, kind of?
So when, in my thought, I had two main churches that and pastors who had impacts on my life. Mm. You've mentioned my parents, all right? So certainly my dad. My dad is one of my heroes in the ministry, all right? Which is a neat thing for a pastor's kid to actually think of their father that way, all right? Unfortunately, too rare.
Sure.
There are certain things about my home church, Prairie Baptist Church, that I thought I would love to see implemented here at Bible Baptist Church. And then the thing that I wanted to take from our church, Fostoria Baptist Church and Pastor Wall, was the missions aspect. So when I first got here, they were participating in missions and they practiced faith promise giving. I think the first year I was here, I'm trying to remember. That's been a long time ago now, right? But I could look it up. I want to say somewhere around $20,000 was given.
Okay.
Maybe more, maybe less, but somewhere around that scenario. They'd been without a pastor for almost 2 years. Mm. And the Lord allowed us to bring in, I think because of Pastor Wall's influence on my life and the speakers that he allowed me to be introduced to, who just a burden for missions, and certainly many of those from wonderful mission agencies, yours, BIMI, and just men of God. In fact, for a number of years, I'd call Pastor Wall and I'd say, hey, you got a speaker for me?
Right.
Who can you recommend? I brought in Pastor Wall. In fact, he'll be our missions conference speaker next year.
Yeah.
He's been with me once, one or two other times before. And so I think it's been a growing scenario.
Right.
And it really, I was blown away by our church family this past year. Mm-hmm. It was certainly monetarily, it was the largest that our church has ever given. Mm-hmm. We've been for about 7 or 8 years stuck right around the 65 to 72,000 range, and it just wasn't making any progress. The Lord has allowed us to steadily grow numerically in our church, and as people hear the truth and the teaching of men who are very gifted in those, I have a burden for it. I would not consider it my strength.
Sure.
And so I think it's just taken some time and bringing in missionaries who are, I don't know a better word to use, all right? Maybe you can edit this, all right? But just good missionaries.
Sure.
They have an excitement and enthusiasm for serving the Lord. You know, I still remember the missions conference where you guys came. It was a unique one because I had just gotten back from surgery from cancer.
Yeah,
I wasn't doing much that missions conference.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just bringing in some couples who just have a passion for what God has called them to do. Right. And I think that has probably been one of the greatest things. I just the couples that we're having are, that's bringing in an enthusiasm that is in addition to the truth of God's word being proclaimed and people being willing to be obedient. And then the aspect of sending our own just adds a whole nother dimension of involvement personally as a pastor, the amount of responsibility that is then added on my shoulders when we have a missionary in a closed country right now and they have some legitimate concerns about things. And so there are times, sometimes because of the time change at midnight, I'm getting messages from them. Yeah. Hey, pastor, what do I need to do on this? What's your thought? Here's the information. All right. So there's additional there. There's this church plant that we're going to be a part of. That is, you know, our church's understanding that there's going to be a lot of involvement in my part as well as our church family, but just trying to help this couple as they are planting that church. And so those things are adding. Those have just happened in the last little bit. So this is, I wish I could say that's happening every year.
Sure, sure.
I would love for that to be the case. I hope it is a growing trend for Bible Baptist Church. And as our young people see the privilege and the joy of serving the Lord from missionaries like yourself, and others that we have in from our assistant pastor and his wife, from this couple we're sending out, that just, I want that to say, man, that's what I want to be a part of. And as we've all heard, you get what you honor. And I think we really work hard to honor the missionaries that God allows us to partner with. You're not perfect. You're no different in some senses than any other Christian. But God has called you to a special place, a place I may never, ever see. I hope to get there.
Yeah.
All right. I hope to get to Senegal.
Sure.
But I hope all of those pieces have just slowly, with time and not, I hope not a dictatorial type of way, but just teaching God's word and trying to live it out and bringing in people who are living it out is having the long-term impact that I desire to see here at Bible Baptist Church.
I love that because I think missionaries need to understand this, and I think it young pastors should as well, knowing that being a good pastor is not just investing yourself to lead the flock and you're in teaching and preaching and one-on-one, but being a good shepherd is bringing in the right influences where maybe you have weaknesses, and it takes humility to do that. And I think that where this church is and the growth they've been in is a good sign of a good pastor is being able to bring in guys to
he's being kind right now.
Okay. But it's true.
So any faults that Joshua has is because I was his youth pastor,
Yeah. We were chatting about that yesterday, just some of our experiences, and he says, oh, if you want to hear stories, you know, about me, you can talk to Josh. And I'm thinking, I don't know how many stories I want to tell because I don't want you telling stories on me. And so we'll just kind of keep that under wraps and we'll stick it at that. But no, yeah, I've always appreciated pastors and leaders who know their people and understand where there are areas that I need to bring in others who can maybe I have a weakness or a strength and I'm going to bring in that where there might be somebody else who could help to enforce our church. We try to implement that with our church. And that was how Malik became the lead pastor eventually. But early on, when he joined us as an answer to prayer, he came and joined our church and we began working together. I saw immediately that not only did he have keen cultural insight, having been a former Muslim, he's Wolof, now a believer. So he had an insight into the culture that I could never, a perspective I would never in a million years be able to gain, but God had gifted him with wisdom and being able to counsel people. And so early on, I started pushing people to Malik for when they would come for personal counsel on certain issues, even while I was still the lead pastor. And it takes a confidence and a humility to say, hey, I'm going to have somebody come in and address that. So I always enjoy, I'll go on our supporting church's websites, and I always enjoy seeing, hey, Pastor Todd's got this preacher in this week. He's got a revival event. And I love the preachers you bring in. You bring in some great guys. So anyways, that's very encouraging to me. And I've always appreciated that about you. Now, we are talking about some strengths and weaknesses. And to close out the podcast, I wanted to talk a little bit about one of what I believe is one of your strengths. And I know you wouldn't say that to lift yourself up, but I think it's such an important aspect of being a good pastor and just a good Christian man. One of your strengths, not just in your teaching, but I think in your life is family. And if you were to come to Bible Baptist and spend any time with Pastor Todd and his family and his wife and his kids, you would see family is it's not just a priority, I think, to you. I think it's ministry. It's life. It's ministry and life and family. It's all intertwined.
Yes.
And some pastors you'll meet, well, their family is, well, if they fit in my schedule, then it's part of my schedule, you know, of routine that I do. But here it's, you know, even just, you know, just we were talking earlier, one of his sons came to the door and they'll either like, we taught our kids to just put your hand on your shoulder and it's immediate. Oh, give me a quick second. And then you address your son. And I think that's so important. Those little things like that. So I wanted you to talk a little bit. I know you do conferences. Your wife travels a lot, right? To preach out quite a bit.
I'm just known as Rachel's husband, right. To be honest with you.
Yeah. She's going to speak at a ladies' meeting in Nova Scotia this year.
Yep.
And I know she's going to love that. That's her first time. And she'll speak a lot on those issues that would be in a, you know, wife, family as well. But you've done quite a few marriage retreats. Yes. I know you've come to different churches in Michigan, your dad's church. We were talking about that.
Yep.
And so I want you to talk a little bit from a missionary perspective. Talk about what are some principles that you teach young couples going into marriage, cultivating a strong family, but we're going to look at it from the perspective of a young family who doesn't have a pastor with them. They're starting a new work. You're isolated in a country. You don't have a lot of people around you that are of the same culture, the same language. And so you're trying to navigate your marriage. And we were talking at lunch earlier. Here's the scenario most missionaries find themselves in. You graduate, you get married, you intern, let's say at your sending church, you work there for a bit, your pastor's helping you make meetings, you're getting calls. And so you don't have a heavy work, you got a heavy workload, but you don't have the stress of dealing with people a lot. You're busy work. Then you go on deputation and it's your passion. You're going to the mission field. You love it. You're presenting it. You're spending time with your wife. Maybe a kid is born, and there's some challenges to traveling, but it's just a great time. To me and my wife, it was like a second honeymoon, traveling on deputation, seeing all the sights in America, Canada, and churches treat you so great. Just churches are generous and they treat you just great. And so we loved it, that whole aspect. And then you get to the mission field and now you're trying to, you think you have a real strong marriage, but now you have to confront culture shock. You're learning a new language. Maybe you're picking up faster than your wife. Maybe your wife is picking it up and you're not. Maybe you're trying to learn the culture. You're starting to face things and now stresses of ministry, relationship with another missionary is hard. Or maybe the people you're starting to minister to, these stresses are being personal attacks from people in the church or people around your community start to add up and you haven't realized it yet, but you actually haven't faced any hardship as a couple. And now you're alone. Okay. So let's start with first, what are some, you know, when you do a marriage retreat, what are some things a young couple comes in? What are some basic principles for strengthening a marriage? Let's say before they go to the mission field, what's some things they should be practicing right after marriage? And then maybe let's talk a little bit about, you know, maybe 2 years into the mission field, you're struggling as a missionary or as a couple, and you don't know where to turn. And you think, well, I'm just going to do the work. You know, should we come off the field to, you know, kind of reconnect as a family? And too many families fall apart.
Sure.
I think a lot of times the wife manifests the emotion of the stress of that relationship. And we blame the wife a lot for a husband and wife leaving the field when I think it's more on the man. It's more the man that dropped the ball with cultivating his leadership. Sure. And all of that. So let's start first with, you know, a young couple. What can they do early in marriage as they're traveling on deputation, things like that, to cultivate a strong marriage before they get to the field?
Okay. Certainly, all of us probably listening to the podcast right now would, you know, we're going to say, you know, have a real relationship with God.
Mm.
So I don't want to not mention that. All right.
No, absolutely.
But where that is real, if I can put it this way, and I realize God works in all of our hearts and lives mm-hmm. uniquely, all right, and praise God for that. We're not right. cookie cutters, okay? But many times it actually does take that big event, a struggle, that will send us hopefully running to God. Now, statistics will tell you that those big events do one of two things. They will either strengthen your marriage or they will tear it apart. Mm-hmm. Back when we were an assistant pastor, what was this during your time that you're still there? Where you been at college?
I think I was
but
in college.
We lost a child.
Right.
Okay. And then the following year with our next child that was born, our third son, the doctors made this statement to me 10 weeks early. It was a Wednesday night. One of your guys that you kind of grew up with in the youth group was preaching for me. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from Rachel and we ended up having to get the ambulance there, get her to the hospital. And in the ER, they said to me, we have to take the baby to hopefully save both lives. Mm. A quote I'll never forget.
Sure.
Okay. That was certainly what could have been a life shattering mm-hmm. experience. And so I remember I'd done enough reading, done enough studying. I'd at least been involved in people's lives enough to know that, hey, this is either going to strengthen Rachel and I, right. or it's going to drive a wedge between us, you know, whether, you know, she would blame me for the loss of the child or right. I could blame her. Okay.
Sure.
And so there was an intentionality, I think, on both of our parts to say, let's stick together.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember we were actually with a missionary friend, somebody you and I both know, when Rachel called me to tell me that we had lost that baby. As mm-hmm. far as she'd had a doctor's appointment, they said, we can't find the heartbeat right. anymore. I was with a missionary trying to be an encouragement to him, took him out shopping mm-hmm. to have him, we were paying for it, but have him buy something for his wife. And Fostoria, you know, it's a long ways away, yeah. right? You can't, yeah. you don't buy anything in Fostoria like that, no, all right? Right. So we work to be intentional about that. Rachel will tell you, for her, it was after we came here, not that she was not a godly lady, but where her relationship with God became the priority that it ought to be for sure. all of us was when I was going through my first bout with colon cancer. Mm. And so that's been 10 plus years ago now. Right. And so where it just became real. So I'm not trying to minimize mm-hmm. anything, but I don't want to gloss over, well, this is a missionary podcast, so we know we all need to have a relationship with God.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Just because you're a missionary, just because I'm a pastor, it doesn't guarantee it. In fact, it may be the easiest places, as we've heard all of our lives, to backslide
yeah.
because we're
yeah.
doing the work of the ministry, but we don't have a personal relationship. Well, so,
And I would say, just to interject, I think when we talk about a relationship with God, that is experience-based, right?
Yes.
It's our personal experience of how we're growing and maturing with God. And so if you haven't faced any major loss or hardship, then that's a aspect of relationship that just by default, you haven't been able to develop yet.
Right.
And so that's something that, you know, whether the Lord allows you to go through those things early on or not, you know, we lost twins in Senegal and the Lord had the right people at the right time.
Yes.
But it was Julie and I, we just said, okay, we're taking a couple weeks off and we're just going to be there for each other and solidify this and just walk through this together. Yep. That it has to be intentional, right?
Yes. And I think that's the key word, Josh, intentionality with every aspect of your relationship. Why not, you know, and I don't want, I'm a simple guy. You know right, that, okay? Right. You've known me for a long time, all right? So I'm very simple, but sometimes it's the simple things that are just so applicable and practical,
mm-hmm.
all right? Go back to when you were dating. Didn't you just have fun?
Right.
You know, why not have fun?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to spend money. I understand we don't all, most of us could use a few more dollars in the bank, right? I mean, and we'd have ways to spend it, all right? I love being with Rachel. I really do. That for me is the key, and not to minimize the children, okay? Mm-hmm. But if I can, I hope this is not off topic, all right? But I see too many, generally moms,
okay,
wives, moms, mm-hmm. who will invest in the children and forget the relationship that is actually supposed to last for life.
Sure.
The relationship with children is temporary. our desire, I've told our boys for years, you know, our home's always open to you, right?
Right.
But,
right.
You know, the desire is for you to grow up and move out.
Right,
all right?
Right.
I chose your mother. All right. I'm grateful that God gave me four boys. All right. But I want to be with her. And so that still has to be the priority.
Right.
Too many examples where whoever it was, mother, father, doesn't matter, but they invested in the kids. And so then when the kids are gone, there is no relationship anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just two roommates. Mm-hmm. So still date. We tell our book now, once again, our schedule is busy, all right? Just like probably the majority of your people listening, okay?
Right, right.
So dates for Rachel and I right now, unless it's a couples retreat where we get to go away and,
right.
You know, we enjoy that scenario as well, but we go grocery shopping.
Right.
And the boys will say our boys are now old enough now where they can take care of themselves.
Right.
And so we're in a different place than some parents, okay? Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're just like, they'll say, how long are you going to be gone? We're taking as long as we can, you know, we will stroll through Walmart for hours just right. So that we can have time together.
Yeah.
But that's part of it. Sometimes it's just grabbing a quick bite to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a late night guy. I would rather be in bed really, really early.
Right.
All right. So it's not late night talks for us or things of that nature, but just whatever the things are that are fun
mm-hmm.
and just making that relationship a priority. So to apply it then to a couple, well, just a young couple, keep that. When the children come, don't ever let that child become the priority. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's adjustments, okay? We've had a child in NICU for several weeks, and that impacted our life.
Right.
And you can't do anything about that at those times, okay? But then you swing the pendulum back to where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because the greatest thing, and I would assume most have heard this, okay, but it is true. The greatest thing you can do for your kids is to give them a solid marriage. But if it's not solid before kids come, you're in trouble,
right.
I think, because those difficulties, those trials will come. You mentioned the experiential thing. And Rachel and I would have told you, we have never viewed God as vindictive.
Mm-hmm.
But we did wonder before God allowed some of those big events to
sure.
happen. God, the people that you used mightily always went through deep waters.
Mm.
God, when are you going to allow that into our lives? Because we would have told you we had a blessed life. Not that we don't have a blessed life now, but it was simple.
Right.
It was easy. I was just the youth pastor. That was nice, not being the one who had to answer for all the things of ministry. So really work to develop a relationship that is real and not just surface level. And for each couple, I think the hard thing to answer your question on, though, is each couple that's different.
Right.
Okay. You've got scripture tells us to dwell with our wives according to knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God didn't give me Julie.
Right.
And God didn't give you Rachel.
Right.
Okay. So I don't need to know about Julie from that standpoint, but you do.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know Rachel. What is it that she likes? How is it that I can just serve her? And I had to learn differently. You brought my parents up as an example. My dad demonstrated love in certain ways for my mom. And so I grew up thinking, that's what it means to love your wife.
Right.
That's how my mom wanted to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rachel, now she appreciates those things, but that's not There's a well-known book, The Five Love Languages,
right.
Okay? And I think there's a lot of great application mm-hmm. from the principles there, okay? that one is not what is okay. Rachel's heart language,
right,
if
right.
you will, okay? So getting to know your wife, and that only comes with time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so making that a priority. Is that what your,
absolutely.
Your desire says?
What would you say to a man then? Because one thing you said about, you know, we're living a blessed life. When, Lord, are you going to have us? Because it's not God being vindictive. But as you study the scriptures, and I've what I feel after years of ministry is that how can the world see how good our God is if a believer can't suffer through something, a loss, cancer, and come out on the other side saying God is still good?
Right.
Then, so it's, you know, obviously God's not being vindictive. It's these things he molds us and shapes us to be better ministers to a lost and dying world. I remember one time on the field, Julie would mention that once in a while, you know, every year goes by and some major tragedy hasn't happened. Like, is when's God? I'm always like on the edge of my seat. She says, like, when is God going to do something major? And we were going through some stresses, and but she didn't perceive it that way.
Okay.
And so I think part of being a missionary is some of the stresses you face, you don't even perceive them or realize sometimes you're facing them. They just compound and they compound because you don't know how to articulate this. And so it just eventually it blows up and it just falls apart when you haven't even realized you were going through stresses and difficulties.
True.
And so I told her there was something we were going through. And I said, well, Jules, that's kind of like, that's up there on a level of this is tough. And we have to, so my question to you would be, how as a man, as a husband, how would you prepare or advise a young man who's going to the mission field, or, and this applies to anybody, how would you prepare intentionality, expecting, okay, tragedy will come, difficulties will come. What can I do to preempt it falling apart so that I'm ready when it arrives? Obviously, cultivating a real relationship with God, but are there things that you can add to what you already spoke on that I can be ready that when I recognize, okay, my wife's going through this, you know, we lost twins, you know, with a miscarriage, and I have no idea. Like, I don't know what she's feeling. I don't know how she's grieving. And I had to learn. I had to start reading some books and get some counsel. How do I husband my wife in a godly way during this time? And so any advice you would give to kind of mentally prepare as a husband?
It's a great question, and I don't know if I can answer it well. Okay, I'll be honest with you. Something that pops into my mind back when my first cancer bout, I'll never forget. I thought I was trying to do my wife a favor. I mean, the doctors before the surgery, one of the doctors' responsibility was to come in and talk to Rachel and I and say, where's the line you want us to draw of us not keeping him alive? This is a conversation we're having. I was 39 years old. I just turned 39. You're not supposed to have those conversations at that age, right? And because of those conversations, I had actually been working on planning my funeral. Trying to help my wife, I was doing it not intentionally. Well, yes, I was doing it behind her back, trying to take some pressure off of her. Because I didn't know her as much as what I should have, and that's my fault, I hurt her with that. And God taught me a lot about being a husband during that first cancer bout, more than probably my previous years of marriage put together. And so I go back to the scriptural aspect of dwelling with your wife according to knowledge. And once again, it's different for, so I don't know that there's a cut and dry answer. So I don't know if I'm as helpful as what, you know, your listeners would appreciate.
Just don't ignore her and neglect, right?
Yeah, those don't do that.
When there's no, you know, before it happens.
Sure. And getting back to the basic of communication. Okay. My wife and I have a running joke right now that says we're married, we don't communicate. Okay. We talked about it at lunch, but sometimes I thought I've told her something.
Right, right.
I end up announcing something from the pulpit and she's like, I didn't know that was happening.
I do that.
Glad I'm not the only one then. Okay.
Oh, we're going to this church this weekend. Oh, thanks for letting me know. We need to pack. It's like, oh yeah.
So truly I'm striving to work at it. I do think the communication thing is a lifelong process, but being able to be vulnerable. And there are times where I know God is working in my life where I just need to say, Rachel, I'm struggling in this area. And where if then she can recognize that I'm willing to do that, that can help her be able to say, you know what, Todd, I'm struggling in this area. And not be, you know, we know the differences between men and women and what our wife gives us a problem. We say, well, if we do A, B, C, and D, we fixed it. She doesn't always want that. Now, sometimes she does. And that's where dwelling with them according to knowledge comes into practice. Oh, she wants me to fix this one. Okay. And sometimes I've asked Rachel, am I just listening?
Right.
You know, am I listening? Am I paying attention? Am I hugging? Okay. Afterwards, she just needs a hug. All right. Or, am I listening?
Right.
And then fixing. Yeah. Whatever that case may be, whether with children, whether with other struggles or something in the house, whatever the case may be. So I've had to learn that I have to ask those questions because I can't read her mind. We talked about it at lunch. Sometimes we assume, you as a missionary, assume what a pastor may be thinking. And so you are reading that into the response or whatever that you get via email. Mm-hmm. And I, as a pastor, maybe am assuming, well, this is what Josh is thinking as a missionary. And so, and generally our assumptions are wrong.
Right.
And the problem develops because we have not communicated. Yeah. I mean, really communicated. And so I know it's simple and it's basic, but I go back to that. That's me. And it's something I'm still working on after almost 28 years of marriage is learning to communicate and know my wife.
Right. Well, Pastor Todd, I really appreciate your transparency and just sharing today. And I want to ask this, we can edit it out if the answer is not what I think it would be. But I wanted to ask, now, I would always tell a missionary, stay with open communication with your sending church, with your pastor, get counsel from your pastor. Definitely keep that line of communication. But, you know, I would say to a young missionary, and if it's okay with you, and again, like I said, we can edit this out, but if a missionary couple is struggling in their marriage right now and they don't know who to reach out to, they have a good church, but maybe that's not their pastor's strength. Would they, you know, would you be open to a missionary reaching out or a missionary wife reaching out to your wife by email and just saying, hey, could we have a moment? Would you be open to that? And
we would love to. I do think because of some of the things that God has allowed both my wife and I and family in general to go through, we have a great desire and burden to help. I hate to say it because I'm the old guy now, okay, but to help young couple.
Yeah.
And if investing in a couple for a few months, a year or two gives them 20 or 30 years of future ministry, and not just ministry, but a marriage, okay, that brings honor and glory to the Lord, then we would love to do that. We talked once again at lunch. I know we're bringing that up a lot, but but about, you know, we had an individual that our church was ready to, they had some issues on the field, not necessarily anything that they had done wrong, but something that they had experienced. And we had their home church and another pastor who we are all connected with all said, hey, you know what? You need to go and be with Todd and Rachel. Right. We had a home set up for them. We were just going to love on them, help them. It's actually one of the reasons why we have this couple that we're going to help plant a church, that why they are here with us. We're just trying to encourage them. Yeah. And if our investment for a few months, a year, whatever the case may be, leads to, you know, a new church being planted and 20, 30, 40 years of a God-honoring marriage and a church that is, you know, seeing souls saved, missions expanded in a region where I may never, ever go or be called to, then we have a desire for that. And I think I can say as well that the desire of our church family would be to help that. And I think we've tried to help cultivate that as we've looked for opportunities to help younger couples. Yes. Older couples are fine too. We would be more than willing. Yeah. So
I would absolutely, if you're a missionary listening to this, definitely stay in open communication with your sending church and with your sending church pastor. But if you're struggling in your marriage, you don't know where to turn, I could not more highly recommend send an email to Pastor Todd. We'll have him give his email in a minute and we'll leave it on the show notes there. But, you know, I like what he said. If you need to take 2 months or a year to preserve future ministry, not just to preserve your marriage, obviously, but so you can have future ministry down the road, then you need to do it. Yeah. If you're on the field, you raise full support and you feel like you're pigeonholed, I got to stay here. I just got on the field. It's only been 2 years, but your marriage is going to fall apart and you're going to lose an entire career. And we don't do it because of that. It's not about losing a ministry or this or that. It's about preserving that marriage and not letting it fall apart. As a missionary who's been on the field, I don't feel like that long, but we've been in the country for 15 years. And my wife knows I would leave the field tomorrow if our relationship depended on it and we had to come back and strengthen our marriage. And I think part of her knowing that is what allows us to navigate some of those difficult times. Because there's a lot that I miss with what my wife needs and how I need to learn more about her. I have so much still to learn about my wife. But I have let her know, despite a lot of my shortcomings, she knows with our kids or with her, I would come off the field for an extended time to make sure our family and our marriage is where it needs to be before going back. And so if you're a missionary and you're at that point, I would recommend reaching out. What's an email? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Okay. Probably email is the best. And it's Toad, old college nickname, diehard, I tell people, right? Toad, T-O-A-D-M. Harrison, H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N @gmail.com, or look us up at visitbbc.org, and you can find our phone number here at the church, and we'd love to be helped. And if you can't, hopefully you have a sending pastor or supporting pastors who you really can communicate and be honest with.
Sure.
I realize you may not have everyone that's like that. But I try to tell our missionaries, listen, we want to be a help. We want to be a partner with you. And, you know, you can be honest with us. I really do want that, because hiding things doesn't do any of us
good. No, that's true. And sometimes when you're in ministry, it's hard to share those vulnerabilities with people you work with or work for or work under. And so sometimes it's good to have an outside perspective to where you can be a little more vulnerable and a little more transparent about certain things.
Agreed.
And so, yeah, I highly recommend that. And so, well, I appreciate your time and really enjoyed this conference so far. We're looking forward to the weekend and closing out, and just looking forward to continuing this partnership as we represent Bible Baptist and all our other supporting churches. We'll be praying for Bible Baptist as you lead the church and as you get the church planted in Montana. And next time we come, we're going to do an interview on that whole process of being a sending pastor
and
what you learned from it and all of that. And so look forward to that. So thank you so much, Pastor Todd. Thank you for listening. If you think this podcast, this session especially, would be a blessing to a young missionary family or any family, as that matter is, please like, share, subscribe, and send it to somebody you think it might be a blessing to. Thank you for listening to the Missionary Perspective Podcast. Have a great day. God bless.